This week we begin a grand experiment, not only with the introduction of a new format for my show, but an experiment on a larger scale as KCBX introduces greater blocks of talk to the lineup. Just like the inspiring TED Talk that just finished, we're testing the waters regarding the viability of radio as a cultural touchstone. Do we as individuals still count on radio as a community resource? Not just a place to find news and entertainment, but also as a place where we can make connections and relate to each other in the community. I am proud and excited to be a part of this new venture, this new talk-heavy lineup that will be coming to you every afternoon. I'm excited to be a part of this new lineup because I've long believed that radio, those voices that come to us over the air, can be incredibly therapeutic and an important resource in helping us to maintain good mental health. I'm licensed marriage and family therapist Elizabeth Barrett, local practitioner, educator, wife, and mother, and this show is called A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, our now weekly forum for discussing those issues that greatly impact our emotional health and well-being, and a place to check in with our ideas about what is normal and okay. And later on in the program, I'm going to invite you to join this discussion by calling in at 805-781-3875. 4 years ago, when I first joined KCBX, I'd been a practicing clinician working with at-risk families and individuals through county social services and in private practice. And I was growing increasingly concerned by the lack of effective care available for those in the greatest need. Back then, and even more so today, our social service agencies were chronically overworked and understaffed. Social workers had huge caseloads with increasingly complex issues. Therapists were limited by the requirements of insurance companies who know or care little about the nuances of dealing with mental health issues. And SLO County at that time had one psychiatrist for the entire mental health component of social services, which resulted in little direct care and an incredible amount of prescription writing. Medications had become the primary source of care doled out to those with the least access to any other options. So as you can imagine, I hated sitting in county meetings hearing the same tale. A client introduced, a list of symptoms shared, a diagnosis applied, and a prescription for some pharmaceutical cocktail written, and then we were on to the next case. And it's not that no one cared, but caring can only go so far when the need for care is oh so great. So at that point, there was a perfect storm of incredible need for care, too few services, and the rapid increase of reliance on medications to care for those suffering from mental illness in many degrees. And they all were being tended by a staff of caring, competent, and overburdened professionals trying to band-aid everyone together. And at the same time, 4 years ago, I was even more afraid of what I saw as the irresponsible increase in medicating individuals for minor life disruptions and the rampant diagnosing and labeling of clients with disorders. 4 years ago, I became a bit disillusioned with my profession, and I felt that I needed to speak out about my concerns that we were creating more problems than we were helping in our current protocol for dealing with mental health issues. It was crazy to me that no one else was questioning the practice of loading 1 to 5 medications onto toddlers or diagnosing someone who was grieving with bipolar disorder and loading them up on pharmaceuticals. And it was crazy to me that I believed I would soon be joined by a majority of my fellow practitioners and all this insanity would stop. It was crazy that I believed that if I spoke out, that we'd all soon get on the same page and that we'd understand that mental health had a lot of nuances that needed to be cared for more than just writing a prescription. But unfortunately, in the 4 years, I feel like we've actually moved farther away from the healing benefits of simple talk therapy and gone more deeply and darkly down a path that is changing the very functioning of our culture, undermining the confidence we have in ourselves and threatening the well-being of every man, woman, and child that puts their faith in mental health in the hands of a well-meaning, licensed, trained, and state-supported professional. And it's not my intention to bash mental health practitioners, because no one enters into this field to do harm to others. Therapists come to this work from a place of great care and concern for the well-being of others. But to be honest, I feel like we've lost our way as a profession, and in many ways as a people and as a community, and we need to talk about that. In light of the Newtown shootings, there's been another plea for discussions about mental health, but we've heard this plea before, and the discussions about mental health seem to stall out before we ever get started. And I think that they never get anywhere because it all seems too daunting, too large. The scope of mental health issues can feel overwhelming, and we fear that somehow we might catch it, whatever that it is that drives people to acts of desperation or acts of evil or acts of just plain craziness, like yelling at passing traffic or carrying on conversations with imaginary adversaries. In order to begin the conversations about mental health, about what makes us crazy, we need to approach mental health in smaller segments. We need to look at mental health on a large continuum, that on one side, on one end of the extreme, we have the devastation of things like schizophrenia and psychotic breaks. And we need to talk about the possibility of reinstitutionalizing people whose care is so great. And on the other far end of the spectrum, we have to talk about general disruptions to our daily functioning, like feelings of anxiety or depression, grief and anger. And then in the middle of this wide continuum, we have all sorts of potential disorders that are listed in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the Bible of Therapists, the DSM. We have everything from personality and dissociative disorders to substance-related disorders, and disorders that are first diagnosed in infancy, childhood, and adolescence. I mean, if you can't find something that describes your symptoms from the official list in the DSM, we can always diagnose you with NOS, which means not otherwise specified. In other words, if you've ever browsed the DSM, you'd be shocked by how many symptoms you've experienced that are connected to a variety of disorders. You'd begin to wonder how many of us are able to actually get up and function on a daily basis by all of the symptoms listed in the DSM. So if we're going to have a serious conversation about mental health, we have to break it down to smaller, more manageable or comprehensible segments. Because how we deal with the 1% of our population who are clinically mentally ill is an entirely different discussion than the one we need to have regarding the mental health of our general population. Unfortunately, over the years, we've tended to lump all mental health concerns into one big pile and started treating the more minor maladies with the same sledgehammer of care that used to be reserved for more catastrophic illness. So I've always envisioned this program as becoming a community resource, a place to safely talk about mental health in its many different and vast forms. I want to pull back the veil on the world of the helping professions and explore the many different options for care that are available and are often not explored because they aren't covered by insurance or may take longer than we usually allow for any type of healing. We need, as individuals and as a community, to become experts on our own mental health and well-being and experts on the mental health and well-being of those we care for. There are unlimited resources for understanding our physical health. We talk all the time about financial health. We talk about relational health and our professional and career health. But the world of mental health seems to be too mysterious. Professionals, pharmaceutical companies, and researchers have created a belief that our emotional health is far too complex for mere mortals to comprehend. And it's this belief that's gotten us into trouble. Because in many ways, we've handed over our mental health and well-being to professionals when we really were always capable of tending to our emotional fitness just fine. We've just forgotten how. Or we've been seduced into believing that we don't need to invest the time into caring for our mental health, or that we can push and push and push, and then when things start to break down for us, we can run to our local MD or MFT or PsyD and grab a prescription and get back on track. But it's not that easy. And nothing comes without a cost. Anyone who's ever taken any type of medication for any type of disease knows there are always side effects, and those side effects can often be more brutal than the discomfort you were trying to address with the pill. So let's talk about what it is to be a functioning, thriving, or struggling part of this community, And before we throw ourselves at the mercy of the nearest therapist or latest diagnosis or grab the newest pill in hopes for relief, let's talk about it. I have high hopes that this weekly hour will offer you a chance to take advantage of the therapist's 50-minute hour. So what would you ask a therapist if you had a chance? Give us a call. You can call now at 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And each week, I hope I'll look for topics that relate to some segment of the mental health dialogue, whether it's how to best serve the needs of the severely mental ill to tips for improving your relational health. And then we'll talk about it, because I believe in the power of talk therapy. I just believe we need more opportunities to talk to each other. Because when we talk about those things that bother us, they lose their power. It's the secrets that we keep that make us sick. It's the secrets that we keep, the things we don't talk about as a community and as a culture, that make us feel diseased or ill at ease. You can call in now at 805-781-3875 to get in on the discussion. Because what would you ask a therapist if you had a chance? What keeps you from talking about these issues? And what kind of things do we need to talk about as a community to address mental health concerns? What about mental health do we struggle with most? What I find is that when I talk with clients, it's the part of ourselves that we hide that become most toxic and start to grow. It's the things that we are ashamed of or fear that become more powerful and start to prevent us from being able to take charge of our own lives. One of our greatest concerns of life is whether or not we're actually normal. We spend a lot of our life trying to look like we're normal, even when we don't feel like we are. But sometimes just talking about those things that we feel like are odd can make them not feel so powerful. I have an aunt that hated driving across bridges. Didn't make her crazy. It made her drive times a lot longer everywhere she went. But it was something that she tried to hide on a daily basis and really kept her from feeling like she fully functioned. But if she talked about the bridge issue, we might have been able to cut down on her drive time back and forth from visits. So what don't you talk about? You can give us a call at 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. It's 2:15, and we've got Carrie on line one. Hi, Carrie. How are you? Oh, are you there? Hi, Carrie. Are you there? Hi, Carrie. Are you there?
Oh. Carrie? Such a strong voice.
There you are,
Carrie. For all these years, so I'm excited to be able to call in. I wanted to comment a little bit about the beginning of what you said in the program,
mm-hmm.
and how we as a community, or I guess it'd be culture more, right? Don't tend, or we've forgotten how to nurture our mental health.
Yes.
I come from more of a sociological background. But I really wonder if part of that has to do with us being independent Americans and not feeling more that our independence versus accountability to each other allows us to either push ourselves to the breaking point or to allow allow reckless kind of behavior that goes beyond the point of being able to be helped or even just, you mentioned grieving,
mm-hmm.
sometimes just being able to have normal feelings of, kind of the blues or grief or frustration or confusion and not having not having the social ties that mm-hmm. we might have had even like 60 years ago.
I agree. Well, you brought up two great points. You know, one is how we view ourselves as a society, as a collectivistic society or individualistic. And we pride ourselves as Americans as being very individualistic, right? That we can take care of ourselves, mm-hmm. handle things on our own. And we're one of the few cultures in the world that see ourselves that way. Most cultures are collectivistic, where they believe that it's the well-being of the whole that matters and that our first priority is to care for the whole. So I think you're right that in some ways that's gotten us into trouble, our mental health in trouble, that we are feeling like we need to handle everything on our own. And we go so far, and we can't do it because our psyche is a lot like fabric, if you look at it that way, and mm-hmm. that you can only pull on and damage fabric before it tears, and that we need to then get some support. And so it is those social ties that we have, just someone to rub our back when we cry, or, you know, hold our hand while we grieve. You know, no one really has all the answers for us, because some things we just have to get through and experience, like grief, mm-hmm. like sadness, like anger. But having another human being to witness that experience is really healing. And I think you've touched on what misses for us as a culture is how do we have connections and maintain that sense of individualism, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I wonder, like, I'm a younger parent, and I'm really thoughtful about how I'm raising my daughter, you know, within a family culture, because I wasn't necessarily raised that way. Mm-hmm. I was raised with a really feminist single mom. Mm-hmm. And so this is all very new to me, to have a partner and have a daughter who would rather be a princess than a warrior,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
But I don't want to discourage any of that, because I think, you know, it's part of her individuality. Mm-hmm. She's nodding at me right now while she's listening to me talk on the phone. Mm-hmm. But I also wonder how can I raise her in a community or a culture that seems so against community and the good of the whole. I mean, all the kids, I feel like, and even the messages I'm getting as a parent is like, just buck up and take it. You know, you're going to do it yourself. You have to do it yourself. How do you have any ideas of how I can start building a community so that she sees the world a little differently and a little more holistically?
I appreciate that question, Carrie, and I appreciate you calling in, because I think that that's a discussion we're going to have a lot over the next few weeks, and I hope that more parents call in, because I think one of the reasons that we have such a high rate of diagnosing our children with different disorders is because so many parents feel so alone that they don't understand if their child's behavior is normal or their interests are normal or what they're doing is normal. And so out of fear that their child isn't okay, they rush in and ask professionals, what's wrong? And then we now start diagnosing children that are going through what are normal transitions in life or normal interests. We start labeling them instead of just allowing our kids to unfold as they are. And I think you're on the right track just by being able to see your child as her own individual and not fearing that she's not a warrior and likes to be a princess, and just trusting. And I think it's all about trust. We need to trust that we all have the ability to be mentally whole with the right support.
Okay.
Thanks so much for calling, and I hope you'll call again.
Okay. Thank you, Elizabeth. Bye-bye.
Bye. So it's 2:19. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We'll be right back.
This is KCBX. It's time for the KCBX Community Calendar. A very unusual, talented, and exciting performer is the headliner for the next Lompoc Concert Association concert. It's saxophonist Ashu, performing Rachmaninoff, Villa-Lobos, and others at the First United Methodist Church on Friday night evening. For all the details, go to the KCBX Community Calendar at kcbx.org. You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist. Coming up at 3, it's Fresh Air, and at 4 o'clock, it's Marketplace. 4:30, it's All Things Considered from National Public Radio. This is KCBX. Oh,
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, our kickoff this week of a new weekly forum to talk about our own mental health and well-being here in the community, socially and at large. And I really appreciate Carrie calling in because there are many creative ways for us to be humans in the world. And I feel like it would be so sad if we were all to be medicated into one commonality, or if we were to take all of the unique nuances of our children's personalities and try to flatten them out to fit into one mold. And I think that's what we need to talk about, is how do we foster creativity and how do we deal with those things about us that are a little quirky and a little odd and still find a way to function in our community. Looks like we have Nick online too. Nick, how are you today?
Fine, thanks, and thank you for taking my call.
I'm glad you called in.
I commend you for opening up this discussion, especially on the radio. I think good for you.
Thank you.
I have a question. How do you get people, normally adults, to acknowledge that they might have a serious mental issue and need to see a therapist or talk to someone? Often they are in denial about, you know, they have issues. So any ideas about that?
You know, that's a great question, and it's really one of those tricky things, like in all things that we struggle with, whether it's a weight issue or a personality issue, right? Any of those things we might have a blind spot to. It's hard to bring that up to our loved ones or to people we care about. But especially with mental health concerns, if we feel that someone maybe is dealing with depression and anxiety or something more desperate on a level that they can't handle. And, you know, I think that the best way to approach these things is to ask our loved one how they feel like they're doing. You know, how are things going for you? How do you feel like you're functioning? What things are going well? Instead of approaching it with a, you've got a problem, let's talk about it, but more of a, to be able to sit and talk to them about how their life is going. Because there's a lot of things we can deal with in our lives. We all are constantly dealing with pains or aches or frustrations, right? It only becomes unmanageable when we can't get up in the morning and do our life the way we want to. And so I think quite often if we are willing to sit and listen to someone, their perspective, they ultimately can come up with for themselves, maybe, you know what, maybe I'm not doing as well as I thought I was, or here's how I'm fine, but maybe I am struggling. And then to say, how would you like me to help you?
Yeah, exactly. I like that. So empathy is clearly important in this. And then being more or less proactive and possibly asking someone you think might be struggling.
Right.
And then being a listener.
Yeah. And I think it is all about the listening and being available. And I think what's hard, Nick, is that our culture goes so fast. Things go so fast. And I know it's almost a cliche now. It has become a cliche to talk about how we're so busy and we're overwhelmed. But it's a simple truth that the time it takes to sit with someone over a course of not just one conversation, but maybe many, many days, very few of us have the time or patience to really sit and hear someone's story long enough for them to be able to open up and say, you know what, maybe I do need help. And I think that's our bigger struggle, is finding the time to be there long term for someone, which is why I think leaning on our helping professionals the way we do gets us in a bit of trouble, because you can't pay someone in a 50-minute hour to give you that empathy and nurturing that we really need to get to the heart of our hurts.
Yes, that's very good. Very good point. Well, thank you very much, and I look forward to future shows.
I look forward to hearing from you. Enjoy your day.
Mm-hmm. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, Vita. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. I wanted to comment on a couple of things that you said and have a question, but I certainly want to support your statements that you made at the beginning about over-medication and what a danger this is. And I unfortunately have a very, very sad story with my own son, who I believe was tragically over-medicated. At one time was given 6 psychoactive drugs.
Oh, my.
Was diagnosed with everything from clinical depression to sad to bipolar to anxiety, and just kept having more and more and more medications added on. And my question to him was, you know, how can you know the synergistic effects of all these medications? How can you know what it's doing to your brain? And I believe before he unfortunately passed away, he didn't know anymore whether he was coming or going. Mm-hmm. He was not the same person. These drugs changed him. He had at one time been a very good-natured person. He became an angry person. He became a person who couldn't deal with anything. Mm-hmm. And I just want to know, how do you get this message out there? And by the way, this was a psychiatrist who was prescribing all of these drugs, and I certainly, you know, voiced my opinions to him. But it's such a tragic thing, and people do not realize. When my son was required to go to therapy, which he was originally when he was under a group insurance plan, mm-hmm. he couldn't get a medication unless he appeared for his group therapy. He was doing like 80 or 90% better. But once that ended, he lost his job. He went under a program where he was assigned to a psychiatrist. Everything changed, and within a matter of 2.5 years, my son was gone, and I don't want to go into the details, but it's tragic, and I want to make parents and everyone aware of what a horrific thing it is, this over-medicating of people and not just dealing with their issues, giving them a chance to express themselves and allowing them to do that in a therapeutic setting, which, you know, as I said, I believe he was doing much better at that time. So I guess my question is, how can we all get the message out there? I really appreciated your statements. It just confirmed in my mind, you know, what I have known now for so long of the dangers of it. So well, thank you.
Vita, first, I want to thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. And I hope that you have people that nurture your story on a regular basis, because I think dealing with your son and the loss of your son is something that needs to be talked to by you as often as possible. And I think that's how we get the message out. I think in a lot of ways, you know, the thing that's the double-edged sword is that we've been taught to trust our medical professionals. We need to have people we can lean on. But at the same time, this rapid growth of the use of pharmaceuticals and our misunderstanding of the long-term effects have gotten us into trouble. And it's dangerous to talk about, because we go down a slippery slope. If we don't attend to the needs of those who seem to be struggling and they get worse, then are we malpracticing because we didn't prescribe medications? But at the same time, I've heard stories over and over and over again of people starting down a path of having symptoms and being prescribed a medication that didn't work. So more medication was added on that didn't work. And then they're taking medication for the symptoms of the medications. And this story, unfortunately, that you're telling about your son is something that is being told over and over again. And my concern is, the reason we don't talk about it loud is because we, again, are afraid. We're afraid of mental health. We're afraid of when someone we know and love starts acting erratically or their behavior changes, and we fear for their well-being, and we don't know how to pull them back in. But I think that it's the talking about it that's going to open the doors and finding alternatives. And I appreciate you saying that the thing that seemed to be helping was the group support, the support of that. Because I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Definitely it did.
And I think that is one of the keys, you speaking to me, us speaking as a community out in the radio world, in the airwaves, you know, talking about our struggles and things that worked and didn't work. That's what's going to start getting us all to stand up and say, wait a second, what are the long-term effects of this medication? What is your, you know, timeline for healing? And if I'm not getting better, when do I get off all of these drugs and start from fresh? Because I think one of the other things you said is so true, especially when we're medicating children or young people, is their brains haven't fully developed until they're 25. And if we start throwing medications into these people's systems under 25, we then stop their brain's ability to ever fully form. And so we never really get to know who they would have been had they made it through this period of time, and that's tragic.
And I fear that some of these professionals owe their souls to the pharmaceutical industry, and that just makes me even more angry and upset about it. And you know, I just wonder what's happened to the profession of psychiatry. And I really do appreciate your voicing this and making it, you know, I hope many people are listening to hear this.
Thank you so
understand.
Much. I hope you'll call again, Vita, and I wish you well.
Thank you so much. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. It's 2:30, and if you'd like to get in on the conversation, please call in at 781-3875, and we'll speak to Stacy when we come right back.
You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist on KCBX. As a result of the Civil War, about one out of every three people in the South suddenly were freed from slavery. Historian Bruce Levine writes about why the Civil War was America's second revolution and how it transformed the South and American politics in his new book, The Fall of the House of Dixie. Terry Gross talks with Levine on the next Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock on KCBX.
Welcome back to A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And Stacey, you're on. What's on your mind?
Hi there.
Hi.
First of all, I'd like to say my heart goes out to Vita. I can fully understand the whole medication hoopla. I want to say, in the system for about 12 years now. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't for my medication, my stability would not be as such. One of the things that needs to be addressed here, I think, is advocacy. You have to advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to have a strong support system. I know that if I hadn't looked, if my support system wasn't strong, we hadn't looked into my past and saw that there were, in my family tree, issues with substance abuse, issues with bipolar disorder, things might not have, I would not be as stable as I am now, mm-hmm. because we have to see here that mental illness is a disease. It's a chemical imbalance. It's really no different than diabetes. It's really no different than a form of a cancer. It's in your brain. So these medications are out there for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's something that has to be looked at from that angle. And I know that this county is full of wonderful professionals that if you know the right, have the right information, you can find that right mix. And the best way to do that is to advocate for yourself, which is difficult. It really is.
Yeah, I agree. I think you bring up a good point about, you know, being our own personal advocate is very important, and we can't just blindly trust that others are going to know what's best for us. And I think, you know, you bring up something that to me is kind of at the heart of what makes me the reluctant therapist, because I think that there are some instances when we talk about mental illness as being a disease no different than diabetes, and that starts to make people feel like it's something you can catch, like a cold or the flu. And, you know, really what we found is very little basis, that the chemical imbalance just clicks on for no apparent reason, that there are things in our behaviors, you know, whether it's drug and alcohol abuse issues or behaviors, you know, in our life or traumas that have happened that kind of switch our chemical balance, you know, that people feel like they can catch mental illness is not really true.
No, not at all. That's why I bring up the point of looking back, looking at your generational past.
Yes.
I mean, it's very important to look at that. And like I said, I'm very lucky to have a strong support system. My family is a huge, huge benefit to me. And like I say, this county is a plethora of wonderful people. We've got, you know, transitions, you know, we've got the community counseling center, we've got Cal Poly's counseling center, we've got wonderful places to go, and it's, you know, the talk therapy that is offered and the groups that are offered here, and the peer counseling, is the Hope House, is wonderful places to be, and there's a lots of tolerance, and it's a very cohesive place to bring up your issues without the stigmas, you know, if you can find them.
Right.
You know, I think my issue with the medications is to be proactive, and nutrition and the triad of, you know, of your spirit and your body being healthy, and, you know, your mind being healthy. You can't have just be lopsided.
Exactly.
You know, and thank gosh, you know, that we live here on the Central Coast, you know.
Which has a lot to do with our mental health.
It has a lot to do with it. But I just want to bring that, you know, make the call and say thank you for being here on the air. But not want everyone to say, oh, medications are bad, because I can't stress enough to find the right ones, and you will find the light at the end of the tunnel.
I am happy that you found that, Stacey, because that is everyone's hope that we find that place of functioning. And I appreciate you calling in today, and I wish you continued success.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And you're listening to Elizabeth Barrett. That's me. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And we're opening up the phone calls at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the conversation. We're talking about what it is to be mentally healthy. And I had brought up earlier about this continuum, the spectrum of mental health. And I think what happens a lot of times that when we talk about mental health issues, we tend to lump them all into one. You know, that being schizophrenic and having generalized anxiety disorder start to look like the same thing, and they're not. That when we talk about our mental health, it's a huge spectrum, and that we're going to have these conversations about what is good mental health, we need to look at them in manageable segments. Like when I'm talking to a client who's struggling with generalized anxiety disorder, you know, I am going to look at all of the things they can do in a holistic way first to deal with those issues before I even consider that there's something more serious going on. But I think we've tended to start feeling like we don't have the power or the control over our mental health that we actually do. Just like our physical health, caring for our mental health has things that can happen that make it work, like taking the time to be quiet for 10 minutes a day, just that much, even 5 minutes a day to sit in silence. You know, we talk about meditating and how important that is, but a lot of people feel like, I can't meditate. I don't have the concentration level, or I don't have what it takes to sit and meditate for any long period of time. But just sitting in silence and counting your breath can have an incredibly healing and centering feeling for us. What we eat, our daily diet, has an incredible impact on our mental health. Getting enough protein, getting the right vitamins, drinking enough water, maintaining our electrolytes. When we're dealing with childhood disorders, you know, we're so quick now to diagnose children with ADHD, just a few symptoms and a teacher notices, and the next thing you know, your kid's, you know, in getting treated for ADHD. But we need to, instead of jumping to the worst case scenario, we need to be looking at, you know, what are some of the simple things that we can do before mental health issues become chronic or become long-term or become something that we can't deal with. In the case of ADHD symptoms, a lot of times you'll find that a child isn't getting enough sleep. Kids need 10 to 12 hours of sleep. Or they're not eating enough food, healthy food. Maybe they're getting too much sugar or too much junk food. Maybe there's struggles in the home. Maybe there's a divorce in the family or some sort of disruption. Kids tend to be the canary in the coal mine when it comes to family struggles. And so when children start to act out, we assume there's something wrong with the child. But if we do some examination, if we do some exploration of the family system, we might find out that the parents have been arguing quite often. And that's why the kids are acting up, because they feel scared or nervous. So when we talk about mental health issues, we do need to look at this wide spectrum. And I appreciate the call about support for the professionals in our community, because there are people doing great work. What concerns me, though, is that I think for every person who's getting great results, we're seeing far too many people who are not receiving the care that they need, or are being rushed through a process, or are not sure where to go. We have some great advocacy for dealing with the stigma against mental health concerns. And so my concern is that if we start talking about the stigma about speaking out about mental health, then we stop talking about simple mental health issues like anxiety or depression or normal transitional feelings like grief over the loss of a loved one. You know, our emotions and feelings are transient. And as long as we are willing to talk about them, they will pass. I'd love you to be part of this conversation. You can call in now at 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. It's your opportunity for a forum of conversation about what goes on in our mental health community, what goes on for us individually. You know, there are a lot of creative ways to be humans in the world, and I sometimes get really sad when I think about all the ways that we don't adapt our little quirks or our personal oddities into our lives, and we try to solve them as problems instead of accepting those things that make us interesting or unique as just being part of who we are. So be a part of the conversation, 805-781-3875. This is a new weekly forum here on KCBX, talking about mental health and well-being. And we've got Chris on line one. How are you today?
I'm well. When you're, can you comment on the how well our mental health professionals, how capable they are of diagnosing? I mean, is there a test for schizophrenia or ADHD?
That's a great question. You know, and there are different ways of diagnosing. As I've mentioned, we have our diagnostic and statistical manual that gives us a list of symptoms, ways to determine whether or not people have different parts of disorders or try to narrow down. The thing that's interesting with ADHD is that there's no brain test. There's just symptoms that we look at, so it makes it really tricky. And I think that's why we struggle so much in the mental health community, because there isn't an exact science of we take this blood test and we know you have diabetes, right? It's not that straightforward or easy to do. So we have to rely a lot on self-reporting by the client or self-reporting by parents or parent observations. And so it makes really kind of figuring out what's going on for someone much trickier. And as one of the previous callers mentioned, what's really important is looking at the history of the caller. What are some of the traits in their family of origin? Because so much of who we are is a result of where we came from. You know, a lot of our behaviors are learned from our parents. If our house was a very angry and loud house, we tend to carry on angry and loud behaviors. Does that help at all?
It's saying, thank you.
Okay, I appreciate your call. I hope you'll call again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Pat, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. First of all, let me say that I'm a senior citizen. And I used to be, is this Elizabeth?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I used to be an employed MFT, but I've been retired for about 8 years. And so my question is really about all of the technology that keeps popping up all over the place. And I know there's a very, very bright side to it, and I could be slightly biased because of my age bracket, but... When you mentioned, you know, the importance of silence, mm-hmm. and a few other things, I thought I'd ask you, what is your feeling about the impact that all of the, I call it, new technology has had on people's mental health?
You know, the thing that's interesting is that the mental health, the technologies are changing much more quickly than our ability to research the impact.
Yes.
So that's one of the struggles that we're having right now in the profession is as soon as we understand that, you know, as little as 4 hours a week on the computer increases our feelings of depression. Mm-hmm. As soon as we found that out, there were 15 other things to take our attention, like Skyping and, you know, texting. And so as soon as we figure something out, we have something else to contend with. So that makes it a struggle. Mm-hmm. I can tell you anecdotally, don't know if I said that right, that I teach at Cal Poly. I teach in the psych department. And so I have great access to the people that have the highest use of all of our latest technologies, right? Our students.
Yes.
And I, on a regular basis, do silent times in the class where I ask them to turn off their phones and not just put them on silent, but actually turn the phone off or leave them at home. Mm-hmm. And to sit with that during just a class period, because usually right after, if there's a break or I take a breath, they all look at their phones. And I ask them to not bring it. And then we talk about the level of anxiety they report feeling when they don't have their phone handy or they can't check in. And so just from that point of view, I recognize that this instant gratification that we have with our phones has led to higher levels of anxiety when we're separated from the phones or when the kids can't see if they have a text every 24 seconds.
Yeah.
And I've also noticed an increase in anxiety. I do a 24-hour freeze in my classes where they go 24 hours with no technology. Now, for you and I, who grew up in a time period where we actually had no technology, at a certain, right? So we kind of look forward to those times when we lose our phone and can't remember our password to our computer. But for our kids and for, you know, a good portion of the population, they don't know a time without always being able to connect to the computer, connect in. And so it's interesting to me the level of anxiety, discomfort, sadness, depression that's reported in merely going 24 hours without being connected to their computers or to their phones.
I
think we're going to find more and more. Now, on the positive side, though, Pat, have you done any Skyping on the computer?
No, I haven't, but I can certainly see that is, I do have a computer, by the way, and I use it, you know, for emails and research, that kind of thing.
Yes.
No, I haven't Skyped, but I'm sure that would be an interesting way to keep in touch.
I think when we start looking at some of the pluses to the technology, that will be something that will lead to that, really, because I'm so concerned about connection, right, and not being isolated.
Exactly.
And in the dark of the night, right, when our heart's beating too fast and we don't know how to calm ourselves down, to be able to connect with another, and if it is in the form of Skype, being able to see someone's face has a hugely calming influence.
It is, but another of my concern is that I feel that having self-awareness, mm-hmm. and really understanding who you are, I don't think that the technology nowadays is contributing to an ability to do that very much.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're always connected to something or someone, you don't, again, getting back to the silence, you don't have the time or perhaps the will to tune everything out and just listen to who you are and think about what you've done, what you want to do, and, you know, that self-awareness, I think, is a crucial element in mental health.
I agree. And I think that's the part that we hopefully will discuss more and more in the weeks to come is what is it like to be silent with ourselves and with our thoughts? Because it's our fear of our thoughts that start to make us run. Right. And then we try to fill our life with busy time. And then every time we try to go to sleep at night, the thoughts invade us. And then we have a hard time sleeping. And then the sleep deprivation starts to cause problems. Right. I mean, you and I as professionals kind of know that pattern. But for someone who doesn't understand, you know, they're trying to avoid the discomfort of being alone with their thoughts, but they open the door to many other issues.
And I'm wondering about ADHD. How this has contributed to an increase.
Yes.
It seems to me that the distraction, it's the age of distraction in many ways. And again, I'm not denying that there's a very positive side to all of this. But I do worry about young people who don't seem to be able to really focus. I mean, let's not even talk about reading serious books, because I don't think that's done anymore, you know. Maybe I'm wrong there. And so you work with students, and so, you know.
I do. And I do have to say, you know, because I had the privilege of working at Cal Poly with some of the smartest children I've ever met in the world. They blow me away. Their level of comprehension and the things they've learned that I didn't know at 21 humble me. But I do worry for their ability to be calm. And I thank you for that reminder, because I need to talk about that more, because that ability is, no matter how smart we make them, if our children can't find the ability to take a few deep breaths and be okay unto themselves, we've done them no service at all.
Well, this is very interesting. I appreciate your views in this.
Thanks so much for calling, and please make it a habit to call in next week.
I certainly will.
Have a good week.
Bye.
It's about 2:48. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, please call now at 805-781-3875, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Reluctant Therapist here on KCBX. Coming up at 3 o'clock on Fresh Air, rock historian Edward tells the story of swamp pop pioneer Joe Barry from southern Louisiana, who recorded music in the 1960s. That's on Fresh Air at 3 o'clock. Then at 4 on Marketplace, flu vaccines have become cash cows for retail pharmacies looking to increase their bottom lines. That story and all today's business news coming up on Marketplace at 4 here on KCBX. Then at 4:30, it's All Things Considered from National Public Radio. This is KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast.
Welcome back to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And Gina, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm in school actually for counseling, but I'm a mom with four kids. And I just turned on the radio, and it's funny because I was just going through some of what you've been talking about. And
you are busy with a lot of kids.
Yeah, I'm good. I homeschool, but I also use the hybrid school program. It's like a half homeschool school, but I have toddler twins.
Mm.
And I'm very much into family and the problem for me has been connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, just like my husband has the computer today, and we went out, me and my twins, we went out, and I was just like out at the Children's Museum in St. Louis, and I was just thinking about, how do I connect with people? Because like I'm like starting over again.
Right.
And how did I used to make friends and stuff? And I try to have conversation with people, and it doesn't really happen very easily anymore. People mm-hmm. seem to go in their groups,
mm-hmm.
you know, like
mm-hmm.
whether it be a church or whether it be like, I don't know exactly what they're doing, but it's harder and harder for moms to connect if you're a stay-at-home mom.
Absolutely.
There's things like parent participation and stuff. And for me, I've struggled sometimes getting depressed and lonely because I care about Village and want to have the community and have for years.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a very difficult thing. So I am actually in disagreement about the computer in some ways because the computer actually is the only way to keep my sanity sometimes
mm-hmm.
because the society has changed so much. And even though I've put tons and tons of effort of trying to get groups together, people live in this money mentality where they have to pay to have their kids go in a gymnastics class, and that's the only way you see people is to pay to do something half the time. Unless you're, you know, it's just harder and harder for people to connect. You just have a conversation when you're out. You know, I don't know. There's that fear of who is that person, and I don't know.
No, I hear your thoughts. And I don't know if your radio is on in the background, if you could turn it off.
Okay. Yes, I noticed I'm like...
I hear us in two ways. But, you know, I think I was a stay-at-home mom for a good majority of the time that I raised my girls. I have two daughters. One's 26 and one's 16. So I've been parenting a long time with a long stretch. And I can appreciate the struggle with making connections with their parents, because I think one of the things that you're talking about is how we change as people once we have children. And so a lot of times the people that were our friends pre-children don't really mesh with our new life post-children. I don't know if you found that. And so that we have to end up finding a whole new group of friends in some ways. And how do we approach that? And I think that's, you know, going out to the park and being in public as much as possible, going to the library and doing the activities that are available to the public are the only ways you can keep putting yourself out there. I understand the struggle, though, is when you have twins or if you have four children, getting out and doing things in the community can be really hard. And in that way, I agree that the computer can be a blessing because you can connect with people through Facebook pages or maybe activity pages and build a community or connection on the computer before you kind of get out into the community as a whole.
Well, I totally would rather do the other. I'm just saying because of my efforts in trying to meet people,
mm-hmm.
because it's not all happening that much, it's harder and harder.
I agree.
If there wasn't just a sense of people at all on the computer, especially like we lived in San Luis, and I was telling my husband, we moved to Los Osos have been here a year and a half, and it's really lonely because there's nowhere to go, really. And I go back to San Luis, just go to the library, and it's like, oh, people, just to chat for a minute.
Yes.
It's like wild. It's like I can't believe how much I miss that.
Yes.
So I'm like, I'm just going to do stuff like in town, you know, just to have that random conversation, you know, when you're walking around or something. But, yeah.
I think the best thing you're doing for your mental health is calling in and talking to me and connecting with your radio community and having the random conversation. And you never know when the one person is going to hit with you. And I love that you're making the effort to get out and go into town, because I think that is critical and key, that if we give up on ourselves, right, if we kind of give in to the loneliness, that's when we get into trouble. And the fact that you're recognizing this and willing to kind of put yourself out there will pay off for you in the long term. And I just, my short anecdote is that my best ally with my first child growing up, I had one friend because I felt very isolated. My husband and I had moved here from the Bay Area, and I knew no one, and I just had a small child, and he traveled a lot for business. And we were at the Children's Day in the plaza, standing in line to get a hot dog, and my daughter started talking to the little girl in line behind us, and I looked at her and looked at her mom, and I just looked at her mom in the face, and I said, do you want to be friends? It was so random and strange. And we just connected, and she's been my best friend for 26 years. So I encourage you to just keep putting yourself out.
Yeah, because I met my other friends from my other kids randomly. So I was like, I guess I'm going to have to start all over and keep putting myself out like I did with my new, now that I'm with my twins.
Well, okay, I'm proud of you. Keep it up. You're doing great work.
All right. Talk to you later.
I appreciate you calling in. And I appreciate everyone who's participated today in the conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And as I mentioned at the start of the show, I'm so excited to be a part of this new talk-heavy rotation here at KCBX. I'm excited to open up the community to more conversation and to bring radio into our homes and to make connections with each other and to relate to each other over the airwaves in any way possible. I hope that you'll think about your mental health and think about ways that we can work together to improve our well-being and maybe take an opportunity to talk about some of the more serious mental health issues that prevent us from feeling close and connected as a community. Our psyche is like a fabric, and it can only take so much wear and tear. So we need to take care of our well-being. We need to take care of our mental health like we take care of our physical health, to take the time to slow down, to connect, to be loved, to love others, and to spend time in community with each other. So I appreciate you for listening and participating today in the conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and if you'd like to continue the discussion, please take a moment and join me on Facebook, because I'm not against any sort of social networking, and I think it's a great place to relate and communicate. So look for the Reluctant Therapist page on Facebook, or you can contact me through email, thereluctanttherapist@kcbx.org. I look forward to chatting with all of you next Tuesday at the same time. Until then, embrace the ways that you're already perfect just the way you are.